It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
Interesting. Most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Older than what?
Well, you're half right.
What is this,
amateur hour? This is going to
be huge. I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
It's time to head home for Wednesday. We're getting over the hump with a Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and a big show, especially since we're going to only do it for about 85 minutes. Yeah, we've got to turn it over to Tin Caps Baseball after last night's rainout at Parkview Field. The Tin Caps playing 2 tonight. So if you do have tickets to tonight's game, you're going to get 2 for the price of 1. And you want to be there a little bit extra early because the original game time was 6:30. It's actually 5:30. And we'll turn it over to Mike Maz in the radio booth for all the action of Tin Caps Baseball tonight, starting at about 5:30 with a condensed pregame show. And then at 5:35, the first pitch of game 1, a 7-inning contest that'll be followed about 35, 40 minutes later by game 2 out at Parkview Field tonight. 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. That's how you get a hold of us. We've got, day 3. Back in the friendly confines is how we will call it. The small studio.
Confines is a good way to describe it.
Just the
confined.
The confines. I don't know how friendly it is. But we are back. Adam and I, nice and snug here in the small studio. It's a studio built for one. We are jammed in here because I by myself have trouble squeezing into a place set for one. But yeah, Adam, you and I are not the smallest guys to be
no,
in this studio.
I think both of us combined probably would be maybe 3 small adult men.
I'm sure we're probably together on the scale. We're probably in that 500 range.
Oh yeah.
Not going to ask, but I think
we won't
combined.
We won't
figure out who's got what.
But we're around there.
We're probably 500 pounds worth of Sports Rush today in the small studio once again. And again, there's so many things to weigh in on today because you've got the Pacers with a very impressive win on the road. In fact, how impressive was it? The Pacers were the first NBA team in this year's playoffs to get a road victory. Now, they got followed up. Dallas got one out in L.A. against the Clippers. So, you know, they've started a new trend. Now you've got a streak going into tonight where it's 2 straight road teams have won games in the NBA playoffs.
Look out.
But what was it, 11 straight?
Yeah, it was 11.
11 straight that were won by the home team until the Pacers got the win last night, 125-108 over the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, you know, the Pacers kept getting threatened. I mean, there were plenty of times where the Pacers could have buckled and let this game get away, where Milwaukee seemed to get some momentum, and then, a 9 or 10-point lead got down to a 2-point contest in the fourth quarter. I thought, uh-oh, here we go. Don't blow this. You've played too well. And then all of a sudden, the Pacers went on that streak. And you know who led the streak? Well, pretty much the guy who led the entire couple of games in Milwaukee, Pascal Siakam.
Yeah, man, he's been fantastic to start this playoffs.
He is certainly making the Pacers look pretty incredible with Kevin Pritchard making that move.
Yeah.
And Chad Buchanan, the Pacers general manager, give them both credit for the decision to get Pascal Siakam. And we went, a year and a half kind of feeling like the Pacers needed that guy. They needed one more stud.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about OG Anunoby And now he's doing some pretty big things for the Knicks.
Absolutely.
You've got Siakam, though. Nobody can top what Siakam's doing. 36 in game one, 37 last night, double-double once again, and doing it with extremely high efficiency. He was 15 of 23 from the field and 3 for 4 from behind the three-point line, 2 for 3 at the free throw line. He ends up with 37 points and 11 rebounds. Meanwhile, here's the stat of the game, Adam.
Stat of the game.
Stat of the game. Stat of the game. I feel like a Dan Patrick episode. The Indiana Pacers finished the game with 38 assists. That's actually right. They have 38 defensive rebounds and 38 assists. So it just so happened I looked at the 38 and thought I had the wrong column. 38 assists. On 50 made field goals.
That's great.
For the NBA,
yeah,
that's total insanity.
Mm-hmm.
76% of their made buckets, there was an assist credited.
Wow.
I mean, I wonder what the average rate is in the NBA for assists. I don't know if there's a way to find that quickly, but, you know, I'm guessing if it's over 50%, it's probably a pretty good number. And the Pacers last night, 38 assists. On 50 made buckets. Now, you know, we all know it's an ISO type of game in the NBA. And so to get that kind of number is ridiculous. Give you an example. 24 assists on 38 made field goals for the Bucks, which still is a pretty good percentage. But nowhere near the 38 assists the Pacers put up. Tyrese Haliburton with 12 of those assists. He had a double-double, 12 points, 12 assists, and was a plus 17, which just so happened to be the final margin. So Tyrese Haliburton stepped up, was better in game two than he was in game one. But all five starters finished in double figures.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that's what the Pacers need.
Yeah.
That's their strength.
Balanced scoring.
Yeah, is that they can come at you with five, six, seven guys that can all score. You had five in double figures, but then you had another with nine and two more with eight. I mean, you're just talking about a lot of consistency. T.J. McConnell actually had 6 points. But T.J. McConnell's one of those guys where he didn't do a bunch. But he was able to actually extend the lead while Haliburton sat on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben Shepherd, how about what he did last night?
Right.
A rookie who stepped up and hit 2 for 3 from beyond the arc, including one that was contested right at the end of the shot clock late. And he was 3 for 4 from the field. He was a plus 11 in 23 minutes. Shepherd was great. And, I didn't think Obi Toppin necessarily had his best game.
No.
But he didn't need to. I mean,
right.
The other guy that plays that position was going off for 37 points in 37 minutes. And the Pacers end up taking control of this one. Really, I felt early on.
Yeah.
I mean, even though it was still a close game through the first half, after the first quarter and through the first half, I still felt like this is Pacers basketball. It's being played at the pace the Pacers want to play at. It's, Milwaukee wants to muck it up. They want to slow it down. They want to get the ball after taking some time to Lillard, let him create. But I thought that the Pacers want to push it, try to score on you in transition. And I thought they did a good job of that last night. I thought the Pacers were the more aggressive team. And so far in the first two games of the series, the team that looked like the aggressor and really put the other team on their heels, that's team that's won the game. And so the Pacers evened up. They say a series doesn't start until the road team wins. Well, this one has started, and now it comes to Indianapolis.
Absolutely. Well, I wasn't able to find assists per made baskets or how many assisted baskets per game there are on average, but I did find that the Indiana Pacers led the NBA this season in assists per game at 30.8. The second closest was the Spurs at 29.9.
Right, and so the Pacers score about their season average in points, but they had almost 8 more assists than they average
for
the season. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Just a great performance last night. Hushed the crowd in Milwaukee. The Pacers, like I said, first team in the NBA to win a road game. And then Dallas, as we expected. You know, yesterday we had Mr. Vegas say that he was going with the underdogs, which was the three road teams.
Mm-hmm.
What did I tell you, Adam? I said, I'm buying on the Pacers and the Mavericks. Because I picked both of them to win the series, right?
You did.
You remember that. I had both those teams to win the series.
Yep.
But I said, even though I took Phoenix to win the series against Minnesota, I said, based on what I saw in game one, that one would worry me.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Minnesota, once again, just controlled and tamed Phoenix. I'm just embarrassed of what Phoenix has done so far.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, is Kevin Durant... as a lead dog, just not the guy.
Right, and it just seems like it's really Booker, Durant, and Beal centered, and if those guys are having off nights, then it's just...
Yeah, they sold out the bench.
Yeah.
To get the star power.
And it's just curtains if they're not performing well.
No, and then you've got Minnesota with the star power.
Yeah.
And maybe we didn't know it going into the season what kind of a star Anthony Edwards was going to be, but
man.
This dude... to me, it's like Edwards and Halliburton both took huge steps forward this year as far as where they're at in the rank and file of stars in the NBA.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
Of course, Tom Crean product. He can take credit somewhat.
Sure.
For Anthony Edwards because he recruited him and coached him at Georgia.
There you go.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Yep, so we're stepping aside a little bit early today, but man, do we have a lot of stuff going on. NFL draft happening tomorrow, Friday, Saturday.
It's hard to believe. It's like, oh, hey, NFL draft tomorrow.
Well, and what gets your adrenaline pumping is the fact that the Colts might trade up because, we're not real sure. We'll believe it when we see it.
Right.
I think anybody that wants to text the show at 46862 is going to text, I'll believe it when I see it. Chris Ballard is not a trade-up guy.
Right. He's just not.
He makes a statement to his team, though, if he does.
Mm.
If you're on that team and you believe, okay, everybody comes back, where are we going to see our improvement? And if Chris Ballard says, I'm getting you the help. I'm going to be aggressive in this draft, and we're going to get the guys we need to be successful. Because right now, what are the Colts? They're a mediocre football team that is, you know, meddling in the middle of the NFL standings. There's nothing special about them for a free agent. They're not aggressive. They're not a team that looks like they have a vision to move forward and to become the next, next true playoff and AFC conference contender. No, everybody looks at Houston as that team. And that's why right now you're looking at free agents that probably would lean more Houston than they would lean the Colts. And it's not just because the weather's warmer. but I think it makes a statement to the NFL. It makes a statement to the rest of the team. We're serious about it here. And I'm going to show you how serious we are. We're going to go get our guy. We're not going to sit back. We're not going to trade down. We're not going to take, you know, the best available when it finally comes to us on the clock. No, we're going to pick the guy that we think can have the greatest impact on our football team, and we're not going to sit and wait for him to fall to us. We are controlling our own destiny. We're not letting other teams make picks for us. Because I feel like if you keep trading down and you keep just sitting and waiting for your number to be called, you're letting all the other teams dictate your draft. Instead of saying, that's the guy we want, who can we make the deal with to go and get him? And I don't care if it's Malik Nabers. I don't care if it's Brock Bowers. I mean, I care a little if it's the corner. I know he's talented, and I know the Colts need a corner. But in that first round, I want to see a pass catcher. I want to see Anthony Richardson get a group of receivers and skill position players that he can grow with, that he can get comfortable with right away, and that the future of the Colts is in good hands. Get it? Receivers.
Oh.
That they're in good hands by getting, if it's tight end, if it's wide receiver, that's fine. I get it. And then you've got some leverage in tight ends that maybe you can make a deal and get a wide receiver somewhere down the road. But truly, I think... when you've got a quarterback like Anthony Richardson that you are counting on and you believe in, the one thing is you can't let him fail or fall short of expectations because you didn't do your job in getting him the best possible weapons. That's why trade up, give up a couple of picks, quality over quantity this year, Chris, and get your man. And to me, the man should be, you know, the worst possible thing, Adam, the worst possible thing is if Chris Ballard decides the first time he's going to be aggressive and he's going to go after somebody is he goes up and he gets an offensive tackle, because that would be such a Ballard move.
Yeah.
Oh, my TV would not be safe. My TV would not survive.
Would have a remote through it.
I'm not even going to be happy if he trades up just to go up and get a defensive back or a corner.
Mm.
I think if you're going to invest where you've got, you know, you've got your best hand. And your best hand is Anthony Richardson, a quarterback. He needs skill players. If you have to slowly build the defense, what did they do with Peyton Manning? Okay, for years. Peyton Manning had a lousy defense. Okay, we can all look back and admit that the Colts defense of the 2000s was not a great defense. They won games 38-35, 35-29 or whatever. I mean, they did not win games 21-17. No, they had a lousy defense, and they trusted Peyton Manning and the weapons that they put around him to outscore people. And that's what the Colts need to do right now. Learn from history. That's the way you can eventually build yourself into a Super Bowl contender, is solidify one side of the football. Right now, you believe that you solidified the defense by bringing every single player back. Okay, fine. But now you do have holes offensively. Alec Pierce is not good enough. And you've got to upgrade there. At tight end, you've been through a revolving door. You've got four guys on the roster that all play the position, but no one that can really be a true weapon out of that position. And you've got a chance. Tight end, Brock Bowers, wide receiver, Malik Nabers. Maybe it's Rome Odunze. I've seen him mentioned on mock drafts. But please, Chris, go offense.
Yeah, we'd love to hear our listeners' thoughts on what you'd like to see out of the Colts in the first round. 46862 is the number to text in. Would love to hear about it. But, yeah, I definitely am going with you, Brett. I want to see someone that can catch the ball.
I'd imagine there's more happening in the world of sports.
There is. There's a little
than just an NFL draft and just the Pacers last night. Let's find out. Let's get caught up with today's top headlines and Adam Lundy.
All right. Let's get right into it today, Brett. I don't know what's going on with that slider, but it's not getting the right audio coming out of it.
we're trying to ruin this studio so we can move into our new home at the other building. We're trying like heck. We've spit on it. I poured my Pepsi down the slot. It still is working.
We'll do our best here. Well,
I hope the engineer's not listening. He's going to think I actually did. We're sabotaging the studio since they let us in it for 2 hours each day.
All right, well, this was the biggest news of today. Reggie Bush has his 2005 Heisman Trophy back as the Heisman Trust announced today the formal reinstatement of the trophy to Bush amid what it called, quote, enormous changes in the college football landscape. The Heisman Trust decision comes after Bush forfeited his Heisman Trophy in 2010 in the wake of significant NCAA sanctions for USC, which included Bush receiving improper benefits during his Trojans career. We'll probably get into that a little bit more later in the
show.
Not
anymore. We just gave it away.
We did give it away. I'm sorry, Brett.
That's why I actually send you a plan of what we're going to talk about.
I ruined the tease.
I just wanted you to be sure to jump in and be first on that subject today.
My bad. Well, the Detroit Lions agreed to massive extensions with two of their top offensive stars today. Wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown agreed to a four-year, $120 million extension, and offensive tackle Penei Sewell is signing a four-year, $112 million deal. And the Pittsburgh Steelers are not expected to pick up quarterback Justin Fields' $25 million fifth-year option, league sources told Adam Schefter today. A first-round pick in 2021, Fields was traded to the Steelers by the Bears last month for a conditional sixth-round pick. And those are your top stories, Brett.
Well, yeah, and it also is one of our future stories of the show. So we were going to tease that a former Heisman Trophy winner was getting his trophy back. But
go ahead and text in.
Adam just broke that story. Fortunately, I did not have the plan to talk anything about the Pittsburgh Steelers and Justin Fields.
Yeah, they're not they're only going to give him this year, I guess.
Yep. Well, it's going to be, let's see what position we're in. They just don't want to commit to anything right now.
Especially now that you have Wilson there, and it's just, we got to figure out what we got.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. If you could just see behind the scenes as to what Mother Nature has done to Adam and I on this Wednesday. We are, I mean, all over each other trying to dually edit audio. We're trying to get situated because we have to be out of here a little bit early. We've got Tin Caps baseball we weren't expecting today because Mother Nature decided to dump like a half a foot of rain on us yesterday. And the Tin Caps rained out last night, so it is a doubleheader tonight starting at 5:35. If you've got a ticket to tonight's game, don't forget to go a little bit early, and you might want to wear a jacket.
A little chilly today.
Maybe, yeah. It might be sweater weather tonight. And maybe a couple of extra layers while you're at it. It's going to be cold.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no getting around the fact that at this time of year, you sometimes have to play them when it ain't raining. And, you know, we got dry conditions. You got to play the games. You can't worry about the thermometer. And it's a little colder than ideal. But it's baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sign of spring.
Tuck that hoodie under the jersey.
You got to go a couple of layers, you know, then maybe the hoodie, then maybe the coat. And, you know, it's even in fashion to take a blanket.
Oh, yeah. I like the blanket.
Just do us a favor for Mike Daly's sake and do not sit behind the dugout and swear at the umpire. Mm. Just we'd like to have Mike Daly stick around and not get tossed.
Yeah, we don't want a Yankees Aaron Boone type situation here at Parkview Field.
Yeah, of course you wouldn't do that. Mike Maz and Brett Rump on the call tonight.
Who's that second guy?
I don't know.
Oh, no.
Some schmo is going to be up there.
Some Joe schmo.
You've got more innings in than I've got.
I do. I've got eight.
So far this year on radio, I've got a pregame show of a game that didn't exist.
That was a long pregame, though.
Well, it was. Okay,
it was extended.
I got bonus time.
You got rain delay theater.
To give you a preview of what not to expect since there won't be a game. Yeah.
Well, so. you'll be ahead of me after tonight, I assume.
Well, I got two games.
Yeah, so you'll be up to 14.
Two games. They're nice enough to throw me on the radio side today. So always enjoy a chance to work with Mike Maz.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like we were talking earlier today, our combined weight and jamming it into this small studio. Well, for Maz and I, you might be listening to the oldest combo of broadcasters in minor league baseball.
We might have to fact check that.
We are the Muppet guys that sit up in the...
up in the balcony there.
Up in
there.
The balcony.
Yeah.
Hey, look at there. That's right. Yeah. But it's always fun to hang out with Maz.
You know what? I think you guys actually might have a run at that record. Just thinking about, you know, minor league usually has kind of some of the younger guys.
You got a bunch
up.
Of young up-and-comers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll have to fact check.
Yeah. We, you know, Maz and I... We're past the day of going up. We're basically career high A guys.
What? No aspirations of double A.
Well, triple. You'll never end a career not having an aspiration. and at my age, an aspirin. But Mike Maz and I tonight, radio call of Tin Caps Baseball, and it starts at 5:30 with the pregame show. 5:35. First pitch. Oh, guess what else?
What else?
I'm going to waddle my big butt out to... this is the most self-deprecating show I've ever done, Adam.
It might be.
I don't know if I'm just feeling down about myself today.
It's the small studio.
Oh, man, I need to see my therapist. No, but seriously, tomorrow we're going to be on the road. We're going out for the Indy 500 Fan Fest. It's going to take place tomorrow, 5 to 8 p.m., out at Electric Works.
That's going to be awesome.
And a special guest host here on the show. A lot of people who've been sports fans in this town for a while, I'm sure, will know our guest host tomorrow.
Oh.
Guest co-host. I will still be there.
Yeah, I was going to say, do I have to...
Yeah, no, it's Tommy Schegler is going to join us, former sports director at 21 Alive.
Awesome.
With Melissa Long and Curtis Smith. You know, it'd have been a lot of fun if we could have gotten Melissa and Curtis to both come out and join Tommy and, you know, have a reunion of sorts. But Tommy will be there. We're going to talk about the NFL draft. We're going to talk about sports in general in Fort Wayne. We'll talk about college basketball and how much it has changed since Tommy was a sports director in TV coverage.
That'll be awesome. We'll be interested to hear about that.
Well, you will. You'll be sitting right there. So I do hope you listen to tomorrow's show, Adam.
Oh, you know how I kind of sit here and don't listen.
Yeah, sometimes the guy that's closest to the action is the last one to listen.
Hey, speaking of events that are coming up regarding 1380 The Fan, I've been told that the tickets are now on sale for our 1380 The Fan summer kickoff at Parkview Field.
Everybody needs to come out and party with us up on the... Here's the great thing. It's on the summit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on the summit.
A unique viewpoint in the ballpark. One of the real unique features of Parkview Field is the fact at center field, you've got the two levels of special group seating.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be a group this time. That's what's great. We're the group for you.
We're giving you an advantage.
So we've booked it, and now you need to buy the individual tickets to join us.
Absolutely. So
food, beverage.
Yeah, your ticket includes all-you-can-eat food service for 2 hours. You get draft beer and house wine. And the first 100 ticket purchasers also get a commemorative 1380 The Fan and Tin Caps cup.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's awesome.
It's all courtesy of Midwest Box Breaks.
Oh, man.
Making it happen. And so your tickets are on sale right now, and I don't know how to tell you to get to them.
I know they're up on the link is up on our Facebook page,
okay.
Facebook.com/1380TheFan. And I know we'll also get a tweet up here in a little bit, so you can go to Twitter and check that out as well.
Okay, that is awesome. Yeah, because it is May 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Thursday that leads into Memorial Day weekend. But here's the great thing about it. It's a Thirsty Thursday.
Yep.
It is a Thursday leading into an extended holiday weekend.
Yep.
And it's throwback night to the Fort Wayne Wizards.
Yeah, they're having their Wizards throwback night that Thursday. It's going to be a whole lot of new merch. They'll have a bobblehead. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. So.
And fireworks.
That's a fireworks night, too?
We got a fireworks
night,
too.
Or are we just taking our own and shooting them off without a... Mike Limmer might have a problem with
Limmer,
that.
Limmer, Nutter, we might lose a little
bit.
Yeah,
after the game, stick around. We're presenting a fireworks show.
No, but right here, you can see fireworks on the promo.
Oh, there you go. Awesome.
How about it?
It should be a great night. That's May 23rd, so we're almost exactly a month away.
Yes.
It will be 4 weeks from tomorrow. So you do want to get your tickets because you want to be one of the first 100. We've got limited number of capacity. So if you get the first 100 tickets, you get that commemorative cup that you'll be able to take home. And it's got the logos of 1380 The Fan and the Tin Caps and Midwest Box Breaks, who kind enough to sponsor our event for us so we could invite our listeners to come on out. And you can purchase your tickets right now by going to facebook.com/1380TheFan. Awesome! I'm excited about that.
You had me at all-you-can-eat food service.
Yeah,
so.
I know. I mean, it's basically, you know, it's like taking yourself out to a buffet that night and getting to enjoy a whole ball game.
What more do you need?
Yeah, you don't. Well, you get drinks too.
Oh my gosh! Well, there you go. Somebody already texting in at 46862. They say count me in. Well,
yep.
Looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, it's $40. But I mean, when you get all the food you can eat, beer, wine.
Forget about it.
Tell me, you're getting a bargain.
That's a deal.
That is a bargain, and it's a section of the ballpark where normally you would never go online and buy a ticket individually.
Nope, not available.
Because it's reserved for groups only.
Absolutely.
And so this is your opportunity to sit in a very exclusive section at the top of the summit. And by the way, a lot of that is protected, does have some roof coverage.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it's going to be an awesome time.
It's kind of like mini Wrigley Field vibes up there in those in that stadium.
Yeah, it's not the treetops.
No, but just being in bleachers kind of.
It's like you're on a rooftop.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's fun.
Yeah, it'll be a great time. That's May 23rd, the Thursday leading into Memorial Day weekend, and get your tickets. Get them quick while they're hot. And remember, the first 100 people that get their tickets purchased are going to get that commemorative cup. So you can remember the event that, This is almost the first formal event that we've done at Parkview Field since the whole Levitard thing we did, which just blew up, and we had like 700-800 people. So you definitely want to jump in and get tickets pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. All right, we got to take a break. Coming up on the other side, Jeremiah Johnson, the Pacers pregame, postgame, and halftime host on Valley Sports Indiana, had coverage last night of the Pacers win against the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll talk to JJ when we return. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and you are connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Quick reminder, we're stepping aside early today. Tin Caps with a doubleheader, trying to make up the rainout from yesterday. So Tin Caps baseball hits the airwaves at 5:30, 5:35 first pitch. That'll be the first of two games out of Parkview Field tonight. We've got all your coverage of Tin Caps baseball all season long here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Last night, because of the rainout, we got to actually broadcast the entire Pacers game. And a good night in Milwaukee was had by all, including our next guest, who was there for it on the pregame, postgame, and halftime on Valley Sports Indiana. Jeremiah Johnson, kind of a short night last night, JJ.
Oh, yeah. I did another interview this morning. They said, we're sorry to bother you in the morning. I'm like, if I can't wake up and be energized after a game like that, I never will. So happy to join all of you this afternoon.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about what happened last night. Two games in, playoff basketball. It is a little different. And I think the Pacers got caught maybe not really understanding how much basketball in the playoffs elevates. But I thought they did a nice job of bouncing back and looked very prepared and were the aggressor, I thought, all night last night in the game.
Yeah, a little bit of similarities in that they had to take a strong left-hand uppercut from Damian Lillard at the start of both games, but they responded so much better in the second game. I mean, both teams were a little sluggish early in game one, but the Bucks went on the run, and again, the Pacers just had no answer, and there were too many guys that attempted shots and were not even close, and I think that got into their head just a little bit. And so it was good for a number of different players to see those early shots go down, because, you know, like it or not, you can say it all starts with defense, but for a lot of guys, they play better defense when their shots are going down and they're playing good offense. So they were pressing a little bit in game one. They played Pacers basketball in game two, what we've come to expect this season. You talk about the game slowing down just a little bit in the playoffs. Does it need to? Well, they proved in game two it didn't need to slow down, at least from their perspective, scoring 125 points.
Let's talk about leadership. You know, if you ask me almost all season long who the leader of this team was, I would say Tyrese Halliburton. He's somewhat the face of the franchise right now, the future of the franchise. Now that it's turned to the playoffs, by default, is Pascal Siakam kind of the leader of this team, or is this still Tyrese Halliburton's team?
It's a good question. I mean, watching the first two games, I don't know if there's a better playoff performer around the NBA than what we've seen from Pascal Siakam. To score 36, to have the attention, and then to score 37. And from what I've seen in the huddles, he has been among the most vocal players, Tyrese Halliburton included, in pulling guys aside, giving them some pointers, giving them instruction, and also boosting them up when at times maybe they're down a little bit. So, yeah, it's probably a little bit too early, maybe a little bit of recency bias. I'm going to say it's 1A, 1B, and even though the numbers don't say that Tyrese Halliburton's off to a good start, the way he played in game two was closer to what you need. He was a reason why they were able to push the pace. He was a reason why they were able to get good looks that they were able to knock down. And he also is the reason why Pascal Siakam had a lot of the success, because he's attracting so much coverage and so many double teams. Tyrese is happy to get the ball to Pascal and he finishes. But it is, you know, not incorrect to say he's the most valuable player from the Pacers early in the series.
It's easy to say the key to Siakam is just that he's playing really well. But when you look at the matchup, is there anything that you can put a finger on that's maybe behind him having this kind? I mean, this is not a Pascal Siakam we saw during the regular season. This is a whole new player who is dominating this series so far. I mean, it's basically Siakam and Lillard are putting on a show. But is there anything as far as the matchup or something the Pacers are running? What do you see as the key?
The way he can score in different ways, and as I talked with Rick Carlisle before the game on Tuesday, he's not the kind of player that if you make an adjustment, you can say, we're going to double-team him and get the ball out of his hands, given that he's on different spots of the floor. Sometimes he crashes and gets a rebound. Sometimes he's slashing and cutting to the paint, and he's the recipient of a good pass from Tyrese Haliburton. When your point guard is so effective and explosive at times, you can double him and get the ball out of his hands. But I think part of the reason is you can't do that to Siakam. Them not having Giannis Antetokounmpo is surely helping. And you mentioned improvement from the regular season. The numbers that Pascal Siakam put up were good, not to this level, but he still was getting you, 22 or so points a game, high efficiency, and he was able to do a good job defensively as well. So he's picking it up a notch, and I'd have to think a little bit of that is the playoff experience that he had with Toronto that so many of these players did not. I mean, he won an NBA championship, so the environment in Milwaukee was not intimidating to him. I don't know if it was intimidating per se to the Pacers, but you mentioned off the top, they were just not ready for the level that you had to bring it to a playoff series, and he was ready. And then he's playing with a lot of confidence. That goes a long way as well. When he's taking a 10 or 15 foot jumper right now, I'm just immediately putting a 2 in my scoring column, because I'm automatically saying he's going to make it. He's that locked in right now.
I thought one of the things that was going to be a key last night was the Pacers needed to get more balance of scoring. And that's not to say that that Siakam had to come back to the pack. It was the rest of the pack had to move up a little bit. I think during the season, it seemed like it was pretty consistent. 5, 6, maybe even 7 that would score in double figures. I think they had 3 in game 1. All 5 starters get into double figures. Everybody contributed, but I've got to point out Nembhard. I mean, how about this guy and what he's... I don't know if the right word is brash, extremely confident, or how you describe it, but he has got a swagger out there.
He is a competitor, and he is not afraid of any moment, any player. He likes to have that challenge of guarding the best players. And I thought it was interesting when I sat down with some of the guys before this playoff series began, and I had a number of questions I wanted to ask different ones, and I wanted to ask some of the guards about what it would be like to defend Damian Lillard and what their strategy might be. I mean, he didn't even crack a smile. And while I maybe praised Damian Lillard in my question, he's like, I'm a competitor. I don't look up to him. There's nothing about that I'm afraid of in any way. And the way he's followed him around, Eddie Gill is probably his favorite person to talk about. We spent probably 2 segments of the postgame show last night just praising what Andrew Nembhard did, because as good as Damian Lillard was, at least Andrew Nembhard made him work for it. And then you didn't even realize, because you were so focused on the effort he was providing on the defensive end, I didn't even necessarily comprehend that he had 20 points until the game was over. I'm like, wow. I mean, I know he was instrumental in the third quarter, but to see it in an efficient manner and be able to be physical while not getting in too bad of foul trouble, and this was, again, his second playoff game. Now, he played for a national championship, so I don't think the environment and the big game stakes will affect him. And I'll tell you this much, Damian Lillard is, they're not friends. I mean, there's a little bit going back and forth between those two guys. And if you're a guy like Andrew Nembhard and you have Damian Lillard's attention, I think you are automatically doing something right.
Well, another guy who's doing something right, at least last night, was Ben Shepherd. And I thought in game 1 that maybe it looked like he was in over his head. But, man, he looked good last night and hit a couple of really tough shots. But I thought he produced at both ends of the floor.
Yeah, he's a guy, though, playing at Belmont, not getting to play in the NCAA tournament. And not to say he's not had big game experience, but you could understand if he was maybe a little overwhelmed in game 1. What I'll say is, watching him, I liked that he shot those 3-point attempts in game 1 without hesitation. They didn't all go in. I think he only made 1. But I felt like the way he played was more similar to the way he played in March in terms of the aggression. Maybe only he made a mistake, but it wasn't due to lack of effort. And again, some of the guys I thought in game 1 hesitated a little bit. You could tell they weren't confident when they shot it. He caught it. He shot it. He didn't always make it, but that experience from Sunday helped him in – game two. And Rick Carlisle shortened the rotation, and he's got a roster full of, you know, NBA players, and you're on his eight-man rotation. That's a credit to Ben Shepherd. And again, a lot of people were lamenting the trade of Buddy Hield and thought they would miss him. There's something to that, but Ben Shepherd can shoot, and he can also defend, and he can play, you know, he can hustle, and he'll dive on the floor. I don't mean this to go down a rabbit hole of, you know, Buddy Hield versus Ben Shepherd, but what you're getting out of him are some of the things and more that you had from that backup two-guard, three-guard off the bench. And again, I think he'll only continue to improve as he gets more experience.
What's it going to be like at Gainbridge tomorrow or on Friday?
Yeah, if any of the fans listening are planning to make the trek down I-69 to Gainbridge Fieldhouse, I do want to hope that all of them come down early. I'm hoping maybe you work a half day and just go ahead and make your way down. The only variable, little concerned with, is that early tip. It's so unusual to have a 5:30 tip on a Friday afternoon, and you know, Friday traffic can always be a problem anyway. So as long as everybody can be there and not be a Miami Heat crowd that shows up in the second quarter, I think it'll be amazing. I mean, the players are looking forward to it. I heard Miles Turner talking amongst some of his teammates last night, just telling them what they can expect. It was loud, despite what even Tyrese Halliburton said. Hey, it was a good environment in Milwaukee at Fiserv Forum. I'm expecting even better at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And again, we've seen the home court be a true advantage throughout the NBA playoffs. To get that series tied at one and have the next two at home, you like where the Pacers are sitting. You just don't want them to relax, be able to deal with success just like they've been able to deal with. They've been resilient. They bounce back from losses. Be able to bounce up from a win, that'll be the challenge on Friday night.
Yeah, that's always one of the keys, especially sometimes for a younger team, is you get home court advantage and then give it right back. And I know Milwaukee's going to come in very hungry. What's the latest you're hearing on Giannis? Are we going to see him this series? Could we see him Friday night? What is the word?
Yeah, some of it I thought would depend upon how the series would go. If Milwaukee won the first two, then I kind of thought you wouldn't see him this weekend in Indianapolis. Because it is 1-1, I'm still a little doubtful about Friday night. I think you'll learn a lot about what you hear from Milwaukee's practice on Thursday. My assumption would be they'll practice in Milwaukee before flying to Indianapolis. I assume they and the Pacers did, but I assume Milwaukee had the day off today. If he participates in team sessions, 5-on-5, then it'll point to me like a very good chance of Friday or Sunday. But if they say he was out on the court just shooting, then I'm going to almost close the door on this weekend and say maybe he attempts to come back on Tuesday. They're talking a little more optimistically, but I didn't get a read from Doc Rivers that he was ready to go on Friday. Again, we'll see now that they lost that game. Do they, you know, risk further injury by putting him out there? Some of it's going to be what Giannis decides. He's your franchise player. You have to protect him from himself. However, you also have to think of his best interest long term. And the Bucks don't want a re-injury.
Pacers at home Friday and Sunday with 7 o'clock and 5:30 tip times. How strange is it that the 5:30 tip time is the Friday game and the 7 o'clock tip time is Sunday night? So it's kind of odd scheduling, but that's the way it works with the TV coverage. And, of course, JJ, you're going to be following the team all the way through this series. So we'll watch on Valley Sports Indiana and appreciate the time.
All right, I appreciate the time. Always enjoy talking with you, and hope everyone has an enjoyable weekend and makes some time for Pacers basketball.
Absolutely. That is Jeremiah Johnson joining us here on the Sports Rush. Of course, we've got Pacers radio coverage. If you don't happen to catch the game in person or on the television, you can always listen to it with Mark Boyle, Patrick Boylan on studio or on sideline, and that coverage will be over the weekend. Of course, we can't do Friday night. We've got Tin Caps baseball, but we will have Sunday night's game right here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Plenty more coming up. This is The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Taking you home. home on a Wednesday. Getting over the hump, it is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Coming up this hour, in fact, just minutes away from talking to James Boyd from The Athletic. We'll get his preview of what to expect with the NFL draft. Also, we are going to step aside just a little bit early today because we've got to make room for Mike Maz and Tin Caps Baseball on the radio. We'll get out to the ballpark at about 5:30, quick pregame, and then it's game one of two tonight because the Tin Caps got rained out, couldn't get it in last night, trying to get in two today before more rain moves in tomorrow night, hopefully after the game, and then it doesn't look great for Friday at this point. But it is great to have you along, and once again, any questions, comments, or suggestions, 46862. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow, we are on the road. Special guest host tomorrow, our buddy Tommy Schegler from Parkview and Parkview Sports Medicine. He is going to sit in with us as we go on the road. We're going to be broadcasting from the Indy 500 Fan Fest happening out at Electric Works out on Broadway. We'll be there from 4 to 6. The show starts, or the, well, our show starts 4, but the real show, the Fan Fest, starts at 5, runs until 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Not only can you check out what we've got going with the live broadcast, but also you can come on by for a special live taping of the new Track Record podcast. So we will be out there for a good 3 hours while Fan Fest for the Indy 500 takes place at Electric Works. That comes up tomorrow. So plenty of rumors surrounding the Colts and what they're going to do in the first round. Watching the mock drafts, it looks like the Colts might move up. At least there's a lot of smoke coming from some of the national media and the mock drafts that the Colts have interest in two or three names. Here's the names I'm hearing. Most often it's Brock Bowers and Quinyon Mitchell, the defensive back corner out of Toledo. Those seem to be the popular names. Now, if it's those guys, the Colts are probably looking to just break into the top 10. Maybe that number 9 pick currently held by the Bears. If the Colts are looking at Neighbors or Harrison, they may need to be more aggressive and get up a little bit higher. There's a chance that Neighbors could slip, but it depends on what somebody has for Roma Dunze out of Washington. Whether I like Neighbors over Dunze. Okay, I would take Neighbors. In fact, I'm not so sure I wouldn't take Neighbors as my number one overall wide receiver. And but I think there's a sentimental aspect to Marvin Harrison Jr. And so if the Colts got a pick where they traded up and Marvin Harrison Jr. was on the board, it's probably a no-brainer. But I want to see the Colts desperately take a pass catcher with that first pick. But, you know, when we look at the three receivers or three of the receivers with Harrison, Neighbors, and then the other name that's popular right now tied to the Colts is Brock Bowers, the tight end out of Georgia. I would not be upset if the Colts end up with Bowers. I'm fine with that. He's another weapon for Anthony Richardson. But I would have Harrison an A, Neighbors an A plus, and Bowers as my A minus. All three would get high grades for me if the Colts are able to snag them in the first round coming up tomorrow night. And right now joining us on our guest line, it is James Boyd from The Athletic, and I've checked out his mock draft, and that is what we are going to discuss today. James, how are you?
I'm doing good. Excited for the draft to finally end all of the guesswork and get to the real deal.
Well, and that's the key word here is guess, because I think there's a lot of guesses out there and there's a lot of options available to the Colts. Can't believe the amount of national media in their mock drafts are projecting the Colts to move up because they have a couple of players they might covet that may not be there at 15. How much do you believe in that possibility?
I don't believe it as much as them. I do think that moving up to perhaps number 9 is obviously more realistic than moving up to number 4 to get Marvin Harrison Jr. But I think 9 is a possibility, but just I'm not that high on it because Chris Ballard has never traded up in the first round through his first 7 seasons as the Colts GM, and I just can't see that changing in year eight. Now, if it were to happen, you know, as a reporter, I would always love to cover, you know, the player you move up for or the big-time wide receiver or something like that. So I'm not opposed to it. I just wouldn't get my hopes up if I was a Colts fan because, again, Chris Ballard has been pretty conservative throughout his tenure as the GM.
The only thing about it, James, and just to play devil's advocate to create a talking point, when you look at what the Colts have done so far in this offseason, they have brought everybody back. They're returning basically all of their starters. You've got a roster that Chris Ballard has somewhat said to us is good enough. He just wants to make it better. Wouldn't that maybe tend to make you believe there's more of a possibility of him moving up and deciding this is the draft to go quality over quantity?
I do think that that is a good argument that can be made. And I've been looking at it like this as well. How many spots are really available for your eventual 53-man roster? Obviously, you guys want to have depth, but it's like even if you, let's say, last year, I think they picked 12 players, picking up a 12 this year, how many are actually going to be on the team by the start of the season? And so even last year, we saw one of their picks get cut. And so I think with all that in mind, it wouldn't be a bad idea to maybe invest in some of the more premium positions by trading up. Obviously, you have to be convinced to go get a player. But, I mean, if you told me, hey, we're trading up to go get, you know, Rome Odunze, or they're trading up to go get Brock Bowers, I'm not opposed to it at all because I think that, you know, ultimately you have to get some skin in the game. You can't always play it safe. You can't always, you know, trade back or do the easy thing. I think that at some point you have to try to go for it, and we haven't seen the Colts do that throughout Chris Ballard's tenure, but the clock is ticking because you have to show something for what you've done during your time here.
At some point, you've got to make your own picks for yourself and not basically make the picks that the other teams left available for you. Although, speaking of that, James, I did look at your mock draft, and you're going under the theory that the other teams are going to whiff on Brock Bowers, and he's just going to magically fall to 15 for the Colts.
Yeah, I think it's the theme I went for with my latest mock draft was realistic optimistic. You know, what's the most realistic optimistic outcome? I do think that there's a possibility Brock Bowers could still be there at 15, depending on what some other teams do to try to get a quarterback. I think, you know, depending on what the Vikings do, if they move up, you know, what teams could possibly, you know, shuffle around. Would that change the board at all? Does his not testing, you know, maybe deter some teams in a way? All those things are a factor, but I think ultimately the Colts would probably, you know, be in a good position if they want to get a pass catcher of some sort. To me, I'm very high on Brock Bowers. I'm very high on Brian Thomas Jr. as well from LSU. You know, big time receiver, a lot of yards after the catch, can stretch the field, all of those things. So, yeah, they'll have some options, but I was thinking, you know, with my last mock draft, I don't want people just yelling at me the entire time. So I just figured, let's be optimistic. Let's step into, you know, maybe not fantasy land for Marvin Harrison Jr., but, you know, a land pretty close to it.
All right, so let's talk about some of the other players that might be available to the Indianapolis Colts. And if you're getting any rumblings as to the Colts' feelings, because the Mitchell kid, the corner out of Toledo, I'm hearing a lot of buzz connected with the or connecting the Colts with him. Do you feel that same buzz?
I don't think that it's necessarily buzz, but just logic. I would say last year it was a little bit easier to kind of decide, okay, the Colts are probably going to reach that because they were going to pick a quarterback. They're picking number four. There's not a lot of options ahead of them. So even estimate what could happen at 15 because obviously you're just further back this year. However, I have been saying this entire offseason, the team is big enough at starting caliber back. If you believe Juju Brinson is a long-term answer, that's great. If you know, obviously Kenny Moore, he's a proven commodity, he's great. You need a third starting cornerback, and I think that Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo really fits the Ballard mold. He's big, he's fast, he's strong. He was, you know, very well liked by his teammates. He was a Senior Bowl participant. And so all of those things, I think, help, you know, swing things in his favor if he's available at 15. And the last thing I'll say is, I know people might question his, you know, ability or his competition level because he played in the MAC. But at the end of the day, if you watch the tape, this dude can play. And it wasn't like he just played in the MAC. He dominated in the MAC, which is what you need to see if you're going to go after a guy who maybe didn't play in some of the bigger conferences.
Well, the one true test he had in the Senior Bowl, he excelled as well. So he proved he can line up against the best of the best and certainly do the job. All right, so let's look at the draft as a whole. Is 1 and 2 pretty well locked in? Is it going to be Williams and Jaden Daniels going 1-2, or do you think there's still some question on the top two picks?
I think Caleb Williams, number one, is the most obvious choice. And it's funny, you know, you hear coaches and GMs before the draft talk about, oh, you know, we'll let you know when everybody else knows, and, you know, we'll weigh all our options, all these things. This is like the Indiana Fever having to not say they were going to draft Caitlin Clark when everyone in the world knows they're going to do it. So they're going to take Caleb Williams, number one. Number two, I do think will still be Jaden Daniels, the Heisman winner. I think there's been a lot of smoke screen there with would he go there, would he not. I think that gets overblown every year so much. These players have no leverage. They're not going to pull Eli Manning because that's super, super rare. They're going to go with their pick, and I think Washington will be happy to have him there. And after that, I think that's when the draft gets a little bit interesting. Drake May is probably the third quarterback off the board. But from there, I think once we get through that first level of quarterbacks, it can become a little bit clearer as to what the Colts are going to do. But Caleb Williams to Chicago, yes. Jaden Daniels to Washington, I would think that's a good sign as well. But Caleb Williams is just no question about it. They haven't even brought in any other quarterback, by the way, Brett. They haven't visited any other quarterbacks. He hasn't gone on any other visits. So it's very obvious that they are going to pick him.
You know, and when you mentioned that number two, Jaden Daniels, it's I still am trying to figure out what Washington was trying to accomplish by bringing all the quarterback prospects in a week before the draft. Doesn't it make sense that if you've got yourself zeroed in on somebody and you know what number one is going to be, that that you'd want to get more one-on-one time with the guy you're considering taking and turning the keys over to?
Yeah, I would think so. It was a weird approach, but I think this is something where, again, nobody's playing right now. We don't have any, Even the Colts haven't really started any offseason training as far as on-the-field work that we can film and discuss and, hey, Anthony Richardson's shoulder. So right now, I feel like this is just something for us to grasp onto and to just debate. But it was a weird approach, but something that I think we'll forget about in literally about, you know, 24 hours here. So I'm excited about the draft. I think that, you know, obviously Washington has been inept in years past. So whatever you're doing, just make sure that you pick the right guy and hopefully put some talent around him. You're not, you know, in the same position again, because that franchise has just been, just sort of a laughing stock the last few years, to be honest.
How far down the board do we go before a team doesn't make the pick that they're currently slated to make? In other words, who trades out and how high would that pick be?
I think that there is a possibility that Arizona moves out of number four, because somebody is willing to pay a king's ransom for Marvin Harrison Jr. Now, if that's Jim Irsay, I'm not sure. At minimum, I think it would cost, if the team is trying to move up, let's say, from the team number four, i.e. the Colts or someone else, it would cost you this year's first, next year's first, this year's probably second-round pick, and maybe next year's fourth or fifth-round pick. So you're looking at four picks if you move up to that spot, which, again, is a very, very hefty price. But if you believe that Marvin Harrison Jr. is a second coming of his father, then you do it, because that means you're going to get a Hall of Famer and you're going to get somebody who's going to, you know, catch 100 touchdown passes over the next decade.
I'd have to be careful, because I think Neighbors it's 1A, 1B for me. I like Neighbors and Harrison, and I'm wondering if Marvin Harrison Jr. is getting a little bit of a boost because of his father's name. What do you think as far as ranking the top three wide receivers? Adunze, Neighbors, and, of course, Harrison. Where do you put them as far as rank in order, and what's their value? How high are they going to go on this draft?
I think all three players will go in the top 10. I think that they're good enough to go in the top 10. And Rome Odunze was actually just in Chicago, or just had a throwing session with Caleb Williams and Keenan Allen, so it seems like they're pretty high on him as well. So don't be surprised if he goes to the Bears at number 9. But as far as rankings go, I'll put Marvin Harrison Jr. number 1. Malik Neighbors number 2, Rome Odunze number 3. I don't think there's this huge, huge gap in between Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Neighbors, but I do think there's a gap. And I think that, you know, obviously his name recognition helps Marvin Harrison, but if you just watch him play the actual game, he is amazing. And I think sometimes just the way he's approached the draft process can be off-putting, you know, hasn't worked out, hasn't tested, hasn't talked. And so all these things can kind of get in the way of what we see as far as the film, as far as his ability on the field. But make no mistake about it, I do think that all three players are going to be very good players in the NFL. But if I had to pick one, be my wide receiver of the future, I'll pick Marvin Harrison Jr. and wouldn't think twice about it, because I think that he's that good. don't know if he's like a generational talent, like people say. I think that word gets thrown around a lot. But again, maybe the generational thing is because of his last name. But to his credit, it's not like we're talking about, you know, Bronny James going pro after 1 year at USC. That was kind of forgettable. We're talking about a guy who, you know, was the nation's best wide receiver and one of the best players in college football.
Hey, real quick, while I got you, since we're probably not going to talk to you between rounds one and the second day, what's a name that, or who is a name that you're keeping an eye on for day two for the Colts? Is there anybody that stands out?
I would say day two, Xavier Leggett, South Carolina wide receiver. He's drawn some DK Metcalf comparisons. That's obviously a best-case scenario for a second-round pick in that regard. But Chris Ballard did say this draft is deep for wide receivers, so I would expect them, if they don't pick a wide receiver or a pass catcher on day one, to definitely pick one on day two in round two. Another name to keep in mind, I would say, is Max Melton, a cornerback from Rutgers. Not as tall as Chris Ballard really likes him, but super athletic, can play inside or outside. So, again, if they do pick a pass catcher in round one and they decide to pick a cornerback on day two, he's the name I would look out for as well. But if you're asking me just overall, I think that on day one and day two, we'll see a cornerback and a wide receiver. What order, I'm not exactly sure, but I'm not buying that Chris Ballard's completely sold in this cornerback room. You need one more, Chris, so yeah. Please pick one.
Absolutely. Well, and I kind of feel the same thing about wide receivers. I mean, that's the great debate is, you know, are the Colts deep enough at corner, deep enough at wide receiver? Now, the only thing, James, that puts me into leaning wide receiver or pass catcher on that first pick is the rookie quarterback, who I call a rookie, even though he's a second-year guy. He's playing his first full season, or at least we hope it's his first full season. And I'm like, man, step one has to be solidify him with weapons. And if you don't get him this year, get him next year. And if you don't get him that year, get him the next. I mean, you've got to just make that almost a priority when you invest in a franchise quarterback. And so to me, that's where the emphasis should be. And if everything falls where you just don't have the right option available for the value of the pick, either trade down or you might look at another position of need. But I'm really hoping that they take care of the pass catcher right off the top in that first round. James, always appreciate you, man. Thanks for the time. Enjoy the draft.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to enjoy it when they give us the free food at the facility. So that's always the time.
Yeah, not too far to travel either to get to Detroit.
Not at all.
All right. We appreciate James. James Boyd joining us here on the Sports Rush from The Athletic. Be sure you get a subscription and you follow his coverage of the Indianapolis Colts. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up on the other side. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Back final time here on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Coming up in just minutes, we turn it over to Mike Maz out at Parkview Field as Tin Caps get set for a doubleheader tonight. They'll take on the Great Lakes Loons, games 1 and 2 of the series taking place starting at 5:35. Of course, Tin Caps got rained out last night, so it's a doubleheader. Starts about an hour before the scheduled single game. So if you do have a ticket for tonight, you're probably going to want to get to the ballpark a little bit early. Get as much warm weather as you can before it gets too cold later on tonight. But we'll have all the coverage right here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. You know, Luke Goody is going to be visiting Bloomington starting tomorrow, and he's scheduled for a two-day visit. I would not be surprised if by the time we roll into the weekend, Luke Goody is officially an Indiana Hoosier. Pretty much everybody right now is predicting that he's going to go ahead, make a commitment, be part of Mike Woodson's ball club next season. And I think he fits in very well. Now, is he going to go there and expect a start? That's not going to happen. He's going to be a guy that has a role, probably playing a little bit of backup three. He might even, in a short lineup, get some time at the four. I don't see him being a guy that's going to step in and play a whole lot of minutes at the two. But his three-point shooting, certainly something that the Hoosiers could use because the roster right now just has an incomplete. It's got plenty of talent, but it's missing that shooter from the outside. Puts a lot of pressure on him, and I think the Hoosiers probably could use another shooter, but you've only got so many roster spots and only five guys get to play. So it'll be a good matchup, I think, for Luke Goody to the Hoosiers. We'll keep an eye on that. Maybe even have it on tomorrow's show. And once again, don't forget, tomorrow we are broadcasting live at the Indy 500 Fan Fest, coming to you from Electric Works out on Broadway. The official event from 5 to 8 will broadcast from 4 to 6. So if you get there early, you can catch our broadcast. If you get there after 6, you might be able to catch a live podcast recording of New Track Record. So be sure to check it out coming up tomorrow. And, of course, our guest host on tomorrow's show is going to be Tommy Shegler joining me. We're going to reminisce a little bit, but also talk about the state of athletics and how much it has changed since he left his sports director's job at 21 Alive. We'll get Tommy's take on what to expect from the NFL draft as we'll count it down coming up tomorrow live on the road at the Indy 500 Fan Fest. Don't forget to get your tickets for our big summer slam. We are going to be out at the Parkview Field for Tin Caps Baseball on May 23rd. That's right, May 23rd, a Thursday, leading into Memorial Day weekend. It's also throwback night to the Wizards, and you can sit with us in the Summit out in the above the 400 Club out in center field. We're selling individual tickets. It includes all the food you can eat, the beverages with beer and wine. You got it all covered for only $40. Get your tickets right now by going to our social media platforms. You can find us at facebook.com/1380thefan, or we are on X, formerly known as Twitter, at 1380thefan. Big thanks to our guests, Jeremiah Johnson and James Boyd. We're out. Tin Caps Baseball coming your way next. This has been a condensed version of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.